Ladies and gentlemen, it is now 3:10. Apologies for starting 10 minutes later than originally scheduled, but as you will be conscious, we had only just concluded the preceding issue-specific hearing 3. So welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to issue-specific hearing 4, which has essentially a double focus, seascape, landscape, and visual impact assessment matters and matters relating to the historic built environment. And if I could just ask the applicant to place the agenda for today's issue-specific hearing 4 onto the screen, thank you very much. Now, I will introduce myself. My name is Rin Smith, and I am the lead member of an examining authority appointed on the 2nd of October 2018 to examine an application for the Thanet offshore wind farm extension. And I have made a declaration of interests responding to the planning inspectorate's conflict of interest policy and confirmed that I have no declarable interests in relation to this proposed development and appointment. My fellow panel members were appointed on the same date, and I will now ask them to introduce themselves.
So I am Jessica Powis, and I also have no declarable interests in relation to my appointment for this project.
I'm Stephen Bradley. I have made a previous declaration. I had involvement with the Thames Estuary Partnership as a freelance writer, and that ceased on being appointed to this panel.
And then if I can also point out to you, ladies and gentlemen, that the Planning Inspectorate is supporting us here today. Manveer Full is sitting on the front seat, and Dean Alford, you may or may not have seen. Yes, Mr. Alford is at the rear of the room. If you have any particular questions that are not matters that want to be put in open hearing that you wish to ask a planning inspector colleague, please make yourself known to one or other of those two. Now then, ladies and gentlemen, we are examining, as I said, an application for development consent for the Thanet Offshore Wind Farm Extension, which is a nationally significant infrastructure project. The application has been made by Vattenfall Limited, who we will refer to as the applicant, and that is proposing, in summary, an offshore wind generating station of up to 340 megawatts installed capacity as an extension to the existing Thanet Offshore Wind Farm in the waters surrounding it, a new cable connection to the shore in Pegwell Bay, and a new onshore cable connection to the electricity transmission system at Richborough, and a new substation, again at Richborough, near Richborough Energy Park, near Sandwich in Kent. And you'll find all the information that you may ever wish to see about this application on the Planning Inspectorate's National Infrastructure Planning website, where there is a dedicated landing page for this examination. Does anybody need but not have a copy of the agenda for today's hearing? Okay, I will ask one of my planning inspector colleagues to source a copy, and we can have that brought out to you. And then the purposes of this hearing are set out in the agenda, and again, I trust that they're not of concern to anybody here. Now, given that you know who we are and why we're here, what I would now like to do is to find out who is here and who wishes to speak. Now, before I do, I will, in my customary way, draw your attention to the fact that everybody has a microphone in front of them on the table. We make digital recordings of all such hearings, and they're published on the National Infrastructure website. I do need to remind you that because we publish these recordings, they effectively are a record that can include personal information and to which the General Data Protection Regulation applies. The Planning Inspectorate's practice is to retain and publish recordings for a period of 5 years from the Secretary of State's decision on the development consent order, so you know, approximately 5 years and 6 months from today. If you participate in the hearing process, it's important that you understand that you will be recorded and you therefore consent to the retention and publication of the material within the digital recording. What we'll always try to do is not to ask for the disclosure of any what would amount to personal information in a hearing, and if anybody should ever find themselves in a situation where they believe that such information is important and relevant to our considerations, rather than just putting it onto the digital record, we would ask people to approach us with the question about what to do with it, because there's normally another way of getting it onto the record that could include, for example, the making of a written submission, which can then be redacted so that personal information does not find its way into the public domain. So anyway, with that explanation, I trust that it is reasonably clear how we use the digital information that we capture. Does anybody have any questions about that or concerns? No, that's good. Okay, can I then move first of all to this end of the table, to Historic England, and ask for an introduction? Not very well.
Hello.
That's yep. Better.
Yep, my name's Stuart Churchley. I'm from Historic England. I'm in the Marine Planning Unit, so I deal predominantly with the offshore matters.
Okay.
But I will be able to answer any other questions.
Thank you very much.
Lucinda Roach from Dover District Council, obviously here as the local planning authority.
Very grateful again for your attendance. And then for the applicant.
Sammy Mullen, Gobi Consultants, on behalf of the applicant.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm Edmund Simons. I'm a heritage consultant for Wessex Archaeology.
Thank you very much.
Hello, I'm Ewan McNeil. I'm a senior project manager with the Coastal and Marine team at Wessex Archaeology.
Hello, Simon Martin from Open Landscape Architects, advising the applicant on seascape landscape visual matters.
Thank you very much.
Daniel Bates, the consents manager for Vattenfall.
Sean Leake, Gobi Consultants, the EIA lead for the applicant.
And Jennifer Holgate from Womble-Bond Dickinson, legal representation on behalf of the applicant.
And if I can just be clear that you'll be conducting advocacy on behalf of your client in this hearing and
so
not counsel.
That's right, I'm no longer Mr. Liners, I'm now Ms. Holgate, so we've swapped from this morning to a different person.
Excellent. Right. Now, just let me check, because I'm looking at the requests to be heard. There was additionally an indication that possibly there might be attendances from the Crown Estate. Is there anybody from the Crown Estate here? Okay, you don't wish to speak? Okay. And then there were requests to be heard from, I believe, John Lowe. No. And Graham Pullman. Right. Yes, no, I think they may be folk who possibly requested to attend the wrong hearing. But anyway, if they're not here, we will proceed without them. In relation to Historic England, there was a suggestion at one point that Chris Pater might attend, but I gather, sir, that that's no longer the case.
Yes, I'm here in his stead.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Okay. Now, finally, before we move on to the substantive agenda, just to tell you that there has already been a fire practice in this building today, so if you do hear the alarm, it's the real thing and it's time to exit the building. Pass down the stairs, don't use the lifts, go to the bottom floor, and there are glass doors with fire exits that lead out into the courtyard that you can see through the windows, and that is our assembly area. There are ladies and gents facilities available should they be required. Ladies to my rear through this pair of double doors, and at the far rear of the room, gents in the equivalent position. Now then, with no further ado, if we can move then on to the substantive matters on the agenda. Agenda item 2, effects on landscapes and seascapes. Our purpose here is essentially to make sure that before we pass through this examination, that we have a clear understanding of any remaining concerns that might arise from interested parties. And we have, amongst other things, been carefully reviewing the positions of the respective local planning authorities of Dover District Council and Thanet District Council, and also reviewing the position of Kent County Council in relation to seascape, landscape and visual issues. Now, I note that we don't have Kent County Council or Thanet District Council here, so this is probably going to be the Dover show. We will spend most of our time in the landscape and visual component of the hearing reviewing Dover's position. Now, initially, I did just want to do a quick check against applicable policy that was raised in Dover's local impact report, if that's okay.
Yes.
And we've had our attention drawn to policy DM15 of the Dover Core Strategy of 2010, Protection of the Countryside. And the proposition that the proposed development might result in, quoting from the policy, the loss of or adversely affect the character or appearance of the countryside. And I just wanted to be clear that Dover District Council were viewing the onshore landscape and visual impacts of the proposed development through that lens. Are we being invited to consider and apply that policy?
Lucinda Roach, Dover District Council. Yes, I mean, DM15 is principally onshore impacts in relation to the countryside. And DM15 is our current adopted policy, although it's being reviewed.
I think we might have a little bit of a problem with the sound system. I think it might be worth trying to bring the microphone a little closer.
Can you hear me now?
Still a little bit quiet, and there was a bit of feedback when you last spoke, so I'm not 100% sure that found its way to the...
Can you hear me now?
That's a lot better.
Yes, Lucinda Roach from Dover District Council. DM15, Protection of the Countryside, is principally related to onshore impacts rather than offshore impacts. It's currently our adopted policy in the core strategy. However, it's currently in the process of being reviewed.
Yes. In terms of progress on the review, are we in a world where we're going to end up with an adopted policy that we need to have regard to within the timescale of this examination, or...?
No, I think it's fairly safe to say we won't be in that territory. It's at very early stages.
Okay, and in terms then of 3 months beyond the end of this examination, the Secretary of State's decision-making period?
I don't think the Reg 18 consultation is going out until the end of the year at the earliest.
Okay,
so we're very early stages.
So we can be quite simple in terms of the way we deal with the policy environment for the Secretary of State. And again, the same then presumably applies to policy DM16 landscape character.
Agreed. Yes.
Okay. And again there, I mean, the policy is referring to proposed development harming the character of the landscape as identified through the process of landscape character assessment. And again, I just wanted to check that, you know, the concerns, again, principally onshore that you raise are ones that you would like us to look at through that framework.
Yes, I can confirm that. The landscape character assessments are all onshore assessments. They wouldn't relate to offshore matters.
Okay, fine. Now, I did have some equivalent questions that I was going to put to Thanet District Council, but I think they are going to go through to written questions number two. So let me just scroll on. In fact, you'll be pleased to hear that I had more questions for them than I had for you.
Glad to hear it.
So if then we're looking at the onshore landscape and visual impact assessment, I'm taking it that in relation to the siting and design of the substation and immediately surrounding connection infrastructure in the context of Richborough Energy Park and the adjacent development, that those are areas that Dover District Council is broadly content with. It's not raising significant concerns in relation to that aspect of the proposal.
Lucinda Roach, Dover. I can confirm that, yeah, we're not raising specific issues in relation to those aspects. We believe the mitigation measures that have been put forward would deal with any concerns that we may have had.
Okay. And then, and this is where we want to look at what's changed, essentially, since you made your deadline one position known. It's clear that the applicant wishes to remove landfall option two. So when we're looking at the passage of the onshore cable route across Pegwell Bay Country Park, how much of that's actually within your area? The boundary, as I recall it, is the country park within your district or within Thanet?
I can confirm it's in Thanet district.
It's in Thanet.
The Dover district boundary runs along the back of the Bay Sports Centre.
Right.
So that rear boundary adjoining the Natural Nature Reserve is the administrative boundary.
Okay, the one that's lined with a row of poplar trees.
The poplar trees
next to the proposed cable alignment.
Yes, that's
okay.
Right.
Okay, fantastic. That's I'm very clear now where the boundary is. So look, I won't put detailed questions to you then about change to the surface laying of cables and the removal of option two in the country park, because I take it you're not that interested.
Well, we did have concerns about it. We didn't think it was that suitable a way forward in terms of the impact it could have on the landscape. So we did raise some initial concerns at the section 42 stage, but now that's been removed from the proposal, we'd welcome that change and think the open trenches and the drilling would be the most two best options.
Okay. Noted. Before I move from onshore matters, are there any other onshore matters that you particularly want to raise with us?
No, I think we've covered it all in our statement of common ground.
Okay. In which case, can we then move to offshore and seascapes? And then I'm going back to your local impact report, where you did spend some time looking at the visualisations, and you raised a number of concerns about specific turbine locations, which I have a note here of 1, 14, 15, 18, 19 and 20 on the wireline diagrams of the drawing from viewpoint 8. And you were expressing concern there about the potential for adverse visual effects and consideration maybe being needed to be given to additional mitigation of such effects. Now, I guess what I wanted then to throw out is that the fact that those positions are, of course, themselves an indicative because the development may occur within the red line boundary. And what the applicant has attempted to represent is essentially a Rochdale envelope worst case scenario in visual terms. And I will ask the applicant to speak to this item in a moment. But what I just was hoping to obtain from you was a sense that, I guess without getting into the specifics of reciting individual number turbines, because those are notional locations, obtaining an understanding of the particular areas of the red line boundary that you might view as giving rise to general concerns in landscape, seascape and visual terms, should there be turbines constructed in those areas?
Lucinda Roach, Dover District Council. I can explain it from my planning point of view.
Okay.
Because obviously I'm not a landscape. I don't have landscape qualifications as such. And these comments put forward in our local impact report
were from our previous landscape advisor.
Right.
Who has since retired, or retired during the course of writing this report. So we wanted to put, as a council, we wanted to give you those views again, and where our concerns lay. My understanding from the information that was given to me in respect of the site of the turbines was that those that are slightly, obviously, we've got the worst case scenario on the Rochdale envelope in terms of the widespread of the turbines. Obviously, the further south they come, the greater impact they would be seen when looking at it from the Dover district.
Can I just stop you for a second? Because I think it would be really quite useful if we could have figure 12 point... It's application document APP hyphen 126, the SLVIA optimum space array layout. Is that one that the applicant can help us by just popping onto the screen? And could it go onto the big screen at the back? And if my colleague, Mr. Bradley, has his laser pointer. So in terms of gaining a... Would it be possible to give you the laser pointer and have you drive it and just sketch the areas that might...
Look, now we've got the screen up, I could explain it. It's the southern section.
Yeah.
So it's the southernmost turbines. So there's, I think, one, two, three, four, five, potentially six. The further south they come, the greater impact they could have from views from Dover District Council. And it would also, by citing those in the southerly locations, the landscape advisor suggested that that would enclose views when you're looking at it from Goodwin Sands, when you're looking down, the more southerly you come down, southerly those wind turbines are sighted, the more it would enclose views of the land and the turbines. So it would enclose the view separating the two elements. I know I've not described that very well, but as I say, I'm having to do it from the notes I had previously, so I do apologise.
No, and don't worry. I mean, we're grateful for for your assistance on it. And in terms of the mitigation that might be sought to deal with that issue as Dover District Council sees it?
I think the only mitigation you could make to overcome our concerns would be to site the turbines closer together over a smaller area. Therefore, it would enclose the impact of the turbines over a wider seascape. So it would be a more defined area. That would be the only mitigation that we could identify. And I think we clarified that in paragraph 3.3.5.
Of your LIR?
Of the local impact report, yes. No, 3.3.6 that referred to the optimum space layout. Taking the second option, which was bringing them all closer together rather than spread out across the full extent, which is the worst case scenario, I appreciate, would perhaps overcome some of our concerns.
Okay. Now, this is something that, again, I will be asking for the applicant's response to, but I think the best way to do that will actually be to proceed through the various questions that we have for Dover District Council, and then the applicant can deal with all of this in one hit. Okay, and then there was an issue that you raised about essentially seascape as viewed from the sea and views to land from the sea, and you particularly raised the significance and the iconic nature of views to the White Cliffs. And I did just want to ask you about any further observations that you or indeed Historic England, because this is a broader historic seascapes matter as well as a seascapes and landscape matter. It falls, I think, into both camps. Any observations that both of you wish to make about the nature of that impact and its significance, and again, observations on mitigability, if any, that there might be?
Lucinda Roach, Dover District Council. I don't think I could really add much more than was already in the local impact report.
Okay.
Thank you.
Historic England.
Hello, Historic England, Stuart Chosley. I don't believe that we had any concerns.
You didn't, but given that it was raised, I wanted to test it with you.
I'd have to confer with our onshore team as well, but from the historic seascape characterisation, we felt that there was no harm and there was very little change that would have been afforded from the proposed development.
Okay. Could I ask that you have that consultation internally, and if by deadline 3 you could put a definitive position in terms of your answer to that question in as a document, that would be very, very helpful. And in terms of tracking actions, that's an action on Historic England, if you're content.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Specifically about seascape.
Yes. And to be clear, this is a seascape point. It is about views to the White Cliffs from the sea, including the combination of the existing offshore wind farm and the proposed development. Okay, there's one final point that I wanted to put to both of you that doesn't arise directly from either of your positions, but it's a matter that I felt from the standpoint of the examining authority is actually quite important to test. Because this, of course, is a proposal to extend an earlier and existing offshore wind farm, and it includes the development of turbines at a substantially larger scale than the existing or host offshore wind farm, and in part located closer to land than the host offshore wind farm. And it's also, as we understand it, the first such application that seeks to do that extension by enveloping a host offshore wind farm. So it will wrap new wind turbine generators in an array area around a central core which contains the existing and smaller scale wind turbine generators. And I guess our observation, having examined collectively a number of these proposals, is that we couldn't recall to mind another instance of essentially the enveloping aspect of the proposal. And we were thinking about analogues being projects such as Burbo Bank offshore wind farm extension or the Walney extension that were in very similar circumstances to this, but actually were linear extensions to an existing array where there were turbines of a different scale, but you could, in a sense, like the extension to a building on land, there was a legibility of the extension. You could read the original, and then you could read the extension. And whilst there were places from which you had cumulative views from a particular viewpoint through the new to the old, or through the old to the new, that in general terms, the legibility of the two from most viewpoints was maintained. Now, I know this is a little bit complex, but essentially what we wanted to ask you was whether there is any concern that arises about the fact that in this case, that legibility is not clearly maintained, because there are quite a large numbers of onshore vantage points that provide views to the old through the new, that combine the effect of wind turbine generators at two scales, and essentially to ask you about the degree to which there might be any concern if other extension proposals maybe even were to come forward that were to adopt this equivalent enveloping form as distinct from ones that have come forward already that don't and that are legible and distinct from their original host. That's a very complicated question, but I thought there's a debate there that's worth having. I think there's a kind of national point there, so I might actually target that one at Historic England first and then come to Dover District Council second.
Historic England, Stuart Churchley speaking. In conversation I've had with colleagues from our southeast region, in terms of the remit of Historic England, they felt that their impact specifically to Margate Conservation Area was low.
And my colleague, Mr. Bradley, will have some individual questions about onshore receptors in the historic environment.
Okay.
So, yeah.
In terms of your broader question, yes, we've not seen a proposal like this where previously existing wind farm, operating wind farm, has a proposal for much larger turbines to turn Rapid and Donut around. This proves quite a useful test case in that, as far as I'm aware, this is probably one of the closest offshore wind farms to land where such a proposal is likely to take place. From our national experience, wind farms are going further and further offshore, in fact, especially in the North Sea, where the visual impacts, historic seascape characterization impacts also are much more negligible.
Yes.
I suppose the only thing, drawing on wide and experience and knowledge from marine planning and activities offshore, they could represent cumulative impacts in future in terms of these offshore wind farms and other activities producing greater impact to specific conservation interests and heritage interests onshore.
Essentially, I mean, I guess the point that I wanted to test was whether essentially the nature and level of visual landscape and seascape intervention and particularly what is sometimes referred to onshore in relation to assemblages of masts and pylons and signage as visual clutter, was something that we should be viewing as essentially broadly acceptable, because if we accept it, I have a sense that there is then a general argument that this form is acceptable, and I have no fixed view at all about whether it is, but I didn't want this examination to close, notwithstanding that very few people had raised this as an issue. I didn't want this examination to close without us having a conversation around the table to consider that, and I'm afraid you folk struck me as being the people who might be able to shine more light on this than anyone else.
Historic England again. I think it could be that in terms of offshore wind farms, that they have been, the location has been sensitively designed, or that there hasn't been, through happenstance, an occurrence where a significant heritage asset has been deemed to be impacted by any proposals that we've seen so far. I think the only one potentially would be Navitas in the English Channel. Mm-hmm. But again, I have a feeling that was more to do with the World Heritage site than it did have specific heritage concerns.
Mm. Burbo also raised some. I don't know whether you recall that. I had the privilege of being a single appointed person examining inspector on that case, and there was World Heritage Site, Liverpool City Centre, waterfront graces issue raised by that. And there, clear and express consideration was given to exactly this point by both the City Council and by English Heritage, as was. It was a while back. And a view formed that there was no adverse effect on the integrity of the World Heritage Site, its designation, that it was already a complex and quite intervened and urban landscape, and that the nature of the extension there didn't change that. But that equivalently there, we were talking about essentially a pair of linear interventions, an existing and a highly legibly distinct new. And so therefore, I couldn't just say, well, that's fine. by analogy with this, because the form is very different.
Again, this is a question that we could consider in greater depth internally with colleagues. I know we're running an internal course on NSIPs and specifically offshore renewable projects, given the quantity of some of these projects that are coming through and potentially being planned for in future. So we might have a more consistent and approximated idea of where these impacts might occur.
And it's essentially with a view to sort of clear and consistent positions on this that I'm asking these questions. Look, what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to ask Dover to say their piece, then I'm going to ask the applicant to say their piece and pick up all of these points. And then I might come back to the value of whether some form of Historic England input into a sort of position statement on the particular nature of the form and the enveloping or the donut question that's been raised by this particular project that distinguishes it from others, and whether that at all needs to make any difference to our considerations. So, Dover.
Lucinda Roach, Dover Council. Mine is a very general point. I found it very difficult to say that I didn't think there was an adverse impact from this proposal. Because the proposed turbines were larger and coming closer to shore than the current array, which obviously we can all see the impacts of already. They're visible from a number of vantage points. That varies depending on weather conditions. But they are noticeable, and they can be noticeable from quite some distance away. To then introduce larger turbines that were closer to shore, I find it very difficult to come to a conclusion there would be no, not necessarily adverse impact, but no visual impact at all, because they would be so much bigger and wrapping around the existing structure that you could already see. That's largely why we have identified that we can't agree there is going to be no adverse impact, because they are going to be so much larger and greater in number than what's there at the moment, and like you say, wrapping around the existing structure.
Okay.
That's a very general comment.
Indeed, but it has been helpful to, I think, have the conversation and kind of drill into the issues raised in the local impact report. Now, before I go to the applicant and give them their opportunity to respond to this, is there anything else generally in relation to seascape, landscape and visual impact assessment that either of you want to put to me, bearing in mind that we are coming back on historic built environment under the leadership of my colleague Mr. Bradley very shortly?
Historic England, no, not from our perspective.
Thank you very much.
Lucinda Roach, no, it's all addressed in our reports.
Thank you. Okay, can I hear from the applicant on this then? Are you happy to range across the whole piece?
Absolutely, sir. Just to recap on the points I think we're dealing with to make sure that we've covered them all, and maybe we'll deal with the less donor-y questions first.
Yes, by all means.
So the first one's mitigation.
Yep.
And the concern on the mitigation from Dover District Council. The second point was around the views to the White Cliffs.
Yes.
And the significance of those views. One of the third points was viewpoint 8 and the general effects on Dover District Council.
Yep.
And then the fourth was the donut question, so the wrapping around of the envelope of the development around the existing wind farm and the extent to which you should take into account that novelty,
yes,
if at all. Okay. Well, perhaps I'll pick up on the mitigation point first. Just to direct you, if you haven't reviewed it already, sir, to the statement of common ground, which we've prepared with Dover District Council, which is Rep 1818.
Yes.
The mitigation measures are set out there in a separate section. Those matters are agreed between the parties as to the mitigation that's been undertaken, and that it's appropriate in relation to both landscape management principles, and that embedded mitigation measures for visual impacts are appropriately secured,
yeah,
throughout the development consent order. I probably should also refer you as well to the response made to 3.3.6, which is in Dover District Council's local impact report, which is our response document, which would sit at Rep 2038. And that was the point raised by the council relating to the suggestion that you might wish to consider a different spacing layout. It would probably come as no surprise to you, sir, that our response to that is that there are certain minimum spatial requirements that in separation distances we have to meet for offsetting against the Thanet offshore wind farm, and there's an efficiency point required there, and in that regard flexibility is required within the order limits, but of course, and we'll come on to perhaps consider this in a moment, the proposal has been designed as sensitively as possible in consultation with those such as Dover District Council in order to achieve the current layout that we have. I'll just defer to Mr. Martin. If you have anything else you want to add on the mitigation point, you may not.
I think I would point you to the view from Sandwich Bay Estate, which is viewpoint 8. I don't know if,
yep,
you can possibly get that on screen and take,
yeah,
a look.
Yeah, that would be very useful.
It's figure 12.34. Yeah, so the first page there is, excuse me, the viewpoint location plan. If we just flick down to the next image, this view shows the sort of baseline panorama from that viewpoint on Sandwich Flats. So we're standing out on the beach looking out to the headland of Thanet. See the operational wind farm in the distance. It's about 20 kilometres away from just over that from that viewpoint. If you flick onto the next, probably the next image or the one after, Sammy, that wireline view shows the turbine numbers quite clearly on the southern and northern side of the site, which Dover District Council have identified in their local impact report. So the grouping to the left of the image.
Yeah, the southern turbines that I picked up in my question.
So the grouping, yeah, the southern grouping are those to the right. Mm. And I think it's the grouping, the issue that Dover have raised there is the lateral extension of those turbines that extend slightly the visual envelope of the operational wind farm. I think our position on that really is that we feel that, that lateral spread, that increase in lateral spread on the skyline of that group of turbines is a fairly small additional increase in the overall developed horizon to the south of the operational wind farm, which takes the wind farm developed area slightly closer to Goodwin Sands, but in the main, the rest of the view, so if you were to just flick back up again, Sammy, that's 290 degree views, so a 180 degree panorama looking out to sea. Much of the rest of that panorama to the south, so if you flick to the next one as well, is and remains undeveloped. And if we're able to go back to the wireline again, Sammy, I could just touch on the northern grouping of turbines there, just in further to the point about mitigation. Originally, the red line boundary covered a larger area in that northwest extent of the site. So one of the implications of the reduction of the red line boundary in that area on the northwest side has been to increase the space of the turbine grouping on that side of the site with the headland that you can see there of Thanet. So I think the point had been raised by Dover about this potential enclosure of the seascape and of Sandwich Bay in that direction. Really, I suppose our position on that is that there does remain a clear area of open seascape between the edge of the wind farm and the headland. Overall, the lateral spread is relatively narrow. It's a relatively narrow addition to the operational scheme.
Okay.
I should probably add an addition. So, I mean, I suppose that segues us on to viewpoint 8 in a sense from the mitigation, unless you had any further questions. I was going to...
Nope.
Thank you, sir. I was just also going to add to what was just said, just in response to the point about adverse effects generally. We, you know, in relation to viewpoint 8, we consider the visual effect is medium high sensitivity, medium magnitude, and so we agree with the council that there is an adverse effect. There is agreement in the statement of common ground on that, but we acknowledge the concerns of course. But I think the point would be we agree there is no disagreement as to that point as to the effect. Is there anything you want to say just generally on viewpoint 8 and some of the design changes or the other points, Mr. Martin, as well?
Really, just to concur with what you said there, that we have identified a significant effect on and acknowledge that significance in our assessment. I would say perhaps that it's on the threshold, if you like, in terms of our impact assessment, that this viewpoint, because of its long distance from the site, and I think we generally use the test in our impact assessment of whether a development becomes a prevailing influence in the view or a material effect on the view. And I think this is somewhere near that threshold compared to some of the closer viewpoints around the Thanet coastline, where there's a very clear, likely prevailing influence of the additional turbines in those closer views.
Okay.
Would it be helpful to move on to the point about the White Cliffs, sir?
Yes, it would. Thank you.
I'd probably defer to... defer to you, Mr. Martin.
Yeah, so I think in terms of the point, my understanding about the point on the visual impacts from the White Cliffs was... It's probably... best considered while looking at the view from St. Margaret's at Cliff, which sits on the headland.
Can we actually just get that on screen?
Yeah, it's figure 12.36, Sammy. Okay. Yeah, so viewpoint location plan again there on the right-hand side relative to the ZTV. So it sits on the Coast Guard Memorial on the top of the cliffs above St Margaret's at Cliff.
Which I will say is a location that we have inspected, but
okay.
On the day, the medium to long range visibility was very poor. Mm. It was raining quite hard. And it was in December. And I think it's worth publicly remarking here that before the end of the examination, there are one or two of the locations that we inspected on that initial unaccompanied site inspection that we do feel it's necessary to go back to. This is one of them.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And I mean, generally, in our impact assessment, we've assumed and generally taken photographs in the sort of excellent, very good to excellent visibility, and we've assumed optimum viewing conditions in all of our impact assessment.
Which is a conservative and worst case.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as you've noted, sir, that often at that kind of distance, you won't have any visibility of the operational scheme or the extension. So the next one over. So the bottom view shows the wire line of the operational wind farm, which is 32 kilometres away,
mm-hmm.
and the extension, Thun extension's 29.5 kilometres. Again, it's mainly in the same visual envelope as the operational wind farm, and I think at this distance we assess the effect as being of low magnitude, and I think that from my understanding of Dover's local impact report, that seems to concur with what they're saying in terms of, I think they said minor or moderate effects from some of these more distant, long distance viewpoints from the White Cliffs.
Mm. I mean, in that respect, correct me if I'm wrong, and I've completely overlooked it, but I don't believe that you have specifically produced a visualization of a view from an offshore location in towards essentially the White Cliffs with the existing wind farm as a component of that view, and then an interposition of the wire line of the new. There isn't.
That's correct. We haven't done any photo montages from seascape viewpoints, offshore viewpoints, looking back at the White Cliffs.
Did you give any consideration to a possible need to do that at any point?
We do. There is a viewpoint from the Goodwin Sands in the viewpoint list, which is shown as a wireline view, and that was agreed as being needed as part of the consultation process. And some of the early expert topic group meetings that we had, the need for a viewpoint at Goodwin Sands came up in those discussions, and it was agreed that we'd show a wireline from that location. But there hasn't been any specific need identified for offshore viewpoints looking back at the coast.
Yeah, I guess, you know, in one sense, the reason why I raised it is because it is a traditional gateway seascape for the United Kingdom, sometimes the first view of the United Kingdom had by generations of folk coming to this country for the first time, typically on a boat, a ferry, whatever. And it's also a view that, you know, many, many thousands of folk see on a daily basis from a modern ferry, typically. And I guess I was wondering whether there might be some virtue in kind of facing that point head on and maybe thinking about the way it might be addressed in a visualization. Because the sense I got from Dover District Council, maybe I'm reading too much into the words, but the sense I possibly got from the relatively brief discussion of this in the LIR was that that might have underlain your thinking, or am I going too far?
It wasn't the direction I was intending when I wrote those words, I'll be honest.
Right.
It was more the fact that, you know, Dover does have some very historic coastline, and the importance of that from an international perspective, as you've identified, is quite important. I think views in of the White Cliffs when coming in from a ferry, I think would be coming in from a different direction, and you wouldn't necessarily see the proposed wind farm in relation to the White Cliffs when coming in on a ferry.
Okay. Well, if it turns out that you don't, that's all well and good. But, I mean, maybe an initial sort of desktop evaluation might be helpful here, which is just to look at the range of the different scheduled ferry routes and think about essentially where the main viewing locations are and whether indeed there is even a need to do this work. And it may well be that the reason why it hasn't been done is because there is no need. But I'm asking, I guess, the kind of foolish questions at the bottom, because it certainly, as I went through the document set, I did think, well, did they ever think about that?
Simon Martin for the applicant. That's certainly something we can take away as an action to consider further, report back on for deadline 3. I would perhaps just add that there are several viewpoints on the Dover coastline, and many of them, and if not all of them, have very much a focus back in the other direction, if you like, towards France, and a lot of the sort of historic significance of that coastline obviously is about that stretch of coastline looking across to France. So in some ways the direction of view towards the development is oblique to that main interest.
Oh yeah, no, I accept that that's very likely to be the case, that it would be a kind of oblique or peripheral feature in possibly a view travelling towards the UK from offshore rather than anything else. But yeah, have a think about it, and I think probably the best way to take this forward would be to put a position statement to us at deadline 3, where you essentially review the work that's already been done and either reach a conclusion for clearly set out reasons that you don't think it's necessary because, for example, you've considered scheduled ferry routes, for example, and where the majority of viewpoints might actually be from, and concluded from that it would either be out of view or so peripheral as to essentially not be within any reasonable likelihood of having a significant impact. However, if you carry that exercise out, and it's a relatively easy one to kind of model virtually. Nobody actually has to be in the sea to do this. I mean, a very simple wireline model should enable somebody just to pop themselves in the relevant location at sea and swing around and see what they see. And if anything unexpected is seen, then we can have that conversation. But if you could start at deadline 3 by kind of reviewing where you are on it and setting out your position, that would be very, very useful. Can we just, if possible, review the wireline, and there's clearly no visualisation, but the wireline from the Goodwin Sands, because we were just working back through App 128 and not finding it. And if when we find it, we could just pop it up on screen.
So the map on screen, sir, is the viewpoint location.
Yeah.
In context on the left, and then in detail in sea on the right.
Surrounded by a large amount of sea.
Yes. Mm. And then the following image will be the Y-line image. So that's the left and the left 90-degree panorama looking towards the land and the cliffs, I think, on the left-hand side of the image. Mm-hmm. And then the if you go on to the next page, Sammy.
While we're on that, it seems to me that we see the white cliffs on the previous image. Mm. If we can go back to one. We see the white cliffs on the extreme left. Is that correct?
Yes, I think that's correct. Yes.
Good. Okay. Thank you.
And then head on to the next image. Yeah.
So the the image there showing the Y-line view towards Thanet extension in the context of Thanet, again, appearing mainly in the same visual envelope as the existing wind farm.
Yep.
With this lateral spread on either side, and the sort of the larger scale of the proposed turbines being evident in slightly closer proximity to the sands.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Now then, the final part of the piece. There was the donut effect.
Thank you, sir. Jennifer Holgate on behalf of the applicant. My initial thoughts on this are, in response to your specific question, is that all projects are novel and they'll have novel elements, and each project is specific, and you'll need to judge the project on those specific merits and harm and impacts, of course. But saying that, there are examples of other different types of layouts for offshore wind farm projects, and indeed, you know, other types of development as well that encapsulate different types of landscape, visual impact, and effects. You know, off the top of my head, Kentish Flats is a good example of a project that has an enveloping type of structure that goes around the wind farm and an existing wind farm. As to simply saying yes or no as to acceptability, clearly our answer to you is yes. We consider that is acceptable, and that we don't think you need to concern yourself that there is some novelty in planning terms that you should, I suppose, worry about in this instance. And it would require us, I suppose, to go in some effort, which is no problem at all, to go through the various elements of our assessment. But I would specifically just draw your attention to, I suppose, two additional points in relation to the assessment itself. The first of which is the planning statement. Mm-hmm. And at paragraph 714 and subsections there, we do go to the trouble of considering elements such as good design, mm-hmm. and the layout of the turbines, and how we consider we comply with those policies that you need to concern yourself with within the national policy statements. And I'd also just draw your attention in relation to the concern that this project in relation to landscape and visual impacts has achieved agreement in nearly all areas with all local authorities. And there's, I think it'd be fair to say, there is very little between us as to what remains outstanding as to the effects of this project. That's because the project has gone through many months, of course, of development and consultation with various stakeholders. But certainly, and I'll pass over to Mr. Martin to give his professional view on this. We are certainly in a very good place from that perspective, and the parties have not raised concerns at all in these areas, and I don't think it is should be of concern when you look at the planning statement, the statements of common ground, and the assessments of, as a whole. And the very focused element of the significant impacts that indeed result from that. I'll just hand over to Mr. Martin if you wanted to add anything in addition.
Okay.
Simon Martin for the applicant. I would just really add to that that the assessment that we've undertaken does identify some of these scale differences that are evident from particularly the sort of closer turbines to the coast being in front of the operational turbines. But in, I think what tends to happen in that case and in enveloping the operational wind farm, the lateral spread of the development tends to be quite contained, so it's always or generally seen within the visual envelope of the operational wind farm. And that does give rise to quite distinctive effects in terms of this project, but it also addresses some of the mitigation that is key to reducing some of the visual effects, particularly the cumulative effect with some of the other operational wind farms that sit around into the Thames estuary to the north and the west. It ensures that the open sea skyline and horizon between the operational wind farm and those developments is maintained, because we're not extending sort of laterally in one direction. I think you were right to make the point about in a way this is a national issue, sort of facing all wind energy development at the moment. The size of turbines, both for offshore development and onshore development, have moved on from earlier rounds of development. So there is a sort of challenge there, a design challenge, if you like, in terms of being able to integrate the current larger scale commercial turbines with those that have been operational for some time. I do believe that we've achieved a good design fit in this in this context and with this site, and fundamentally there's an operational wind farm that already has an influence on this seascape, and the proposal is for three-bladed wind turbines that have some visual similarity and cohesiveness with what's already there. And I think in terms of acceptability or capacity in the seascape, our view and our conclusions in the assessment really found that the development didn't tip the point at which the seascape is currently, I would say, a seascape that's influenced by wind farms, and they're a key characteristic of it, but it doesn't, Thanet Extension doesn't tip that into a seascape which is completely influenced by wind farms as the prevailing feature. And I would say that the envelope, if you like, that's fairly tight around the operational wind farm contributes to achieving that.
Okay. You've made a very interesting reference to Kentish Flat Extension, which I hadn't actually reviewed as I prepared these questions, because it is currently archived. I don't actually have access online to the works plans or any of the LVIA materials submitted to the Planning Inspectorate. That was one of the earliest examinations, if not the, it was probably the first one after
number two, I think,
after the IPC, which dealt with the first. It was probably the second. It's really going to sound a little bit bizarre coming from the organisation that originally had custody of that examination, but if there is any way at all of surfacing electronic copies of the seascape landscape and visual impact assessment for that, and perhaps the work plans, so that we could just essentially compare the relationship between the original array and the proposed array there, with essentially this, and we can look at what was consented there and viewed. We can obviously read the examining authority's report, but without the underlying visual material and the plans, the words don't actually help an enormous amount. So if you could surface those for us, I'd be very, very grateful.
So Jennifer Holgate, on behalf of the applicant, certainly, as you can see today, we've had a few consultants here that have worked on a number of different offshore wind farms. So between us, we will see what we can do. And also what I would say, and I think I mentioned this earlier, is this is an initial example. So we will also go and give that further consideration as to other examples as well in response to that, if that is helpful.
Yeah, I think that is. Which in turn takes me to the sort of musings of Historic England and whether there's any value in some form of holistic kind of conversation between colleagues about this as an issue. I think in principle there is, but I think I'd be rather averse to asking you to do it for the next deadline if the applicant is actually going to think about instances of this particular form approach in offshore wind farm extensions and actually give us an answer at deadline three. This includes reference to at least one other project that has taken this form and been consented. Because what I would actually suggest is that if you were going to have a think about it and its potential in principle effects at a national scale, there's not much virtue in you doing that until, if the applicant says KFE is a relevant consideration that we should take into account, it'd be very remiss of us to ask you to do the work without looking at the material that they've surfaced, or indeed any others that you might surface. So what I'm going to suggest is, if the action remains on the applicant to do the initial submission to us at deadline three, we will then review that. If we find ourselves needing to return to Historic England, can we leave it that we will give you a written question in our round of second written questions?
Hi, Historic England. Yes, that's good for us. Thanks.
Excellent. I think that probably deals with all of those points, unless you had anything further to add.
No, sir. Jennifer Holgate, on behalf of the applicant, I'll just check with the... Nope, we are good here. Thank you.
Okay, well, what I'm going to suggest we do now is I will just return briefly to the agenda and just check that I did have a number of Thanet stroke Kent related questions that are just going to have to become written questions anyway. So I just need to check that there's nothing remaining in relation to that item. There were also a number of matters for Kent in relation to effects on the country park, which again I don't see any point in raising in their absence. There was then a point in relation to Margate Conservation Area, which I think is worth referring to with Historic England present, but I think that's probably best taken up entirely by my colleague, Mr. Bradley. So I'm going to suggest that we've probably reached a point where we're switching from agenda item 2 to agenda item 3. Mr. Bradley, are you content to go straight into that, or would you like to have a 15-minute break before you start it?
I think other people might want a 15-minute break.
Okay. Let us resume then at 4:40, and we will march through Historic Environment, hopefully at a reasonable pace. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.